I would ask for a motion for the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Approval of the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I would note there's a blue sheet on the minutes. And I can't move approval. I wasn't here.
Can I speak to that?
Yes.
I think what Mary's getting at is that she was not able to be here at the last meeting. She had a family obligation out of town. And so I sat in on the committee in her behalf.
For Virginia.
For Virginia. And in the minutes seemed to reflect that I was just a member who was...
It's changed now. That's why we have a blue sheet.
Changed it.
That's why we have a blue sheet.
Oh, you've got a blue sheet.
Blue sheet.
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
So you should
right.
move approval.
I'll move approval of whatever was Mary just proposed.
Motion made for approval.
What other comment? I note in the minutes, and I think this is what we talked about, the rail service criteria discussion was deferred to September, but I think it's now October.
Right. Yes. Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I would abstain because I was absent.
Okay. Action items. Authorization for public hearing for proposed bus service adjustments. Before we get started on it, I would say that after a long absence, adjustments, the board supported very strongly the idea of a mid-budget year adjustment in bus service on the assumption that they could be cost neutral. It is essential, I believe, to have a dynamic bus system that reflects changes in ridership demand. As we saw on 16th Street, there are areas where demand increases sometimes almost overnight, and we need to begin to adjust services. We tried this last year, I think, without exception, it was the right thing to do, and led to further discussion about what other adjustments the bus system should be making. The board then approved as well the $5 million in customer service improvements, which was the largest funded increase in bus service in 5 years for the system. We hope that this process continues to meet the rider's demand for a flexible and on-time bus service. And with that, let Jack describe the process and the recommendations. Mr. Winkler.
Thank you very much. As Mr. Down said, we're for the committee today for requesting action to approve a public hearing to consider some bus service changes that would implement service effectiveness, improve customer satisfaction, and most importantly is not increase expenses or the budget or the amount of subsidy that's in the FY13 budget. In the 13 budget process, the board authorized about $1.3 million in service state of good service operational changes and $5 million in service advancements. Part of this calculations that we've worked with jurisdictions would include some of that money of the 1.3 is already expended. That's included as part of some of the adjustments that we're looking at making under this proposal. When we came to you last year, we felt that, as Mr. Downs again mentioned, that there are a lot of things that happen within the region that require changes. We think that there are components of the system that can be changed. We made recommendations last year to take away some service in some areas, primarily where there was duplicate of service. I think we indicated that for every one person disadvantaged, that 13 to 15 people would be advantaged by the changes that we made. We projected that we would see better ridership, and we would also see better on-time performance. What this chart, and Bill Green in the last meeting indicated that there was a 6.5% increase in ridership. On the routes that we adjusted through this process that we did last year, we saw a 7.5% increase in ridership on the routes that were impacted. And system-wide, for fiscal year 12, we saw an on-time performance improvement of 1.2%, but we saw 5.3% improvements on the routes that we impacted. So these changes, when you're dealing with no increase in expenditures, are small, but we think that they're a result of a lot of work and a lot of effort, and we think that we've improved productivity from a ridership standpoint and also from on-time performance. The first one, John, yeah. So the process that we go through is we look at a number of things throughout the year. So once we finished last year's, we started working on this year's proposals to see if there were changes. Again, we have the five adopted criteria from the board: the average ridership per day, passengers per revenue trip, passengers per revenue mile, subsidy per passenger, cost recovery. We also look at cost per passenger, passengers per revenue hour, load factors, cost per mile, running time, non-peak productivity, regional equity. So we take all of this review internally, criteria, and we then, through the process of public meetings, through the purpose of studies, working with jurisdictional staff, we develop recommendations and continue to discuss and bring those recommendations essentially in a package, having been reviewed by the jurisdictional staff, bring it to this committee and make a recommendation to go to public hearing to get more. Even though we've had plenty of public input, we'd like to get official, formalized public input through a public hearing process. Some of the requests that we're making to go to public hearing require a public hearing process, but as we did last year, we think it's better to lay out every change that we're looking at, whether we have the authority to do it or not, to share that with everyone in the public hearing process. We anticipate that the public hearings would, if approved by the board this month, that we would do the public hearings in October and return to the board by the end of the year with our final recommendations. As we did last year, we did see changes. As a result of the public hearing process, we would anticipate that we'd see changes this year based on input from the public and based on further consideration by jurisdictional staff and our own staff as we move forward. So we would look forward to coming back to you by the end of the year to recommend changes that we think will add trips to reduce overcrowding, adjust running times to improve on-time performance, hopefully add some evening and weekday trips, replace unproductive routes that don't meet criteria, and certainly eliminate any duplicative services, either that is being operated by Metrobus or the other jurisdictional systems that where there's still service for the public. I think we believe that there, in the recommendations that we made, there's only about one segment of one route that really has an impact of losing service, but our anticipation is the ridership in that area is probably no more than about two or three people a day. So I think, as we said last year, we think that the impacts on people will be minimal, and the improvements for those that see the service changes will be significantly greater than that number. Again, we are, again, not increasing the fleet, we're not increasing the budget, we're not increasing the subsidy, we're using the money that the board authorized in the FY13 budget, we're using the fleet that we have, and trying to make balanced adjustments throughout the three jurisdictions. And with that, we again would recommend that the committee approve this and forward it to the board for approval. So if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Second motion, Mr. Chairman.
Would appreciate a motion.
I would go ahead and move that we move this forward to the board and recommend that we hold public hearings.
Second. Motion made and seconded. Discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'd like to propose an amendment on behalf of Prince George's County. We have had conversations with management about it. And so we are proposing that we amend the resolution to add an additional Maryland option in attachment A, pages 2 and 3, to the item W4 for the public hearing. It impacts the Chevrolet area specifically. So the alternative we're proposing to be added would reroute F13 between Cooper Lane and Annapolis Road via Capitol Plaza Shopping Center. And we are also requesting, which management has agreed to, is for a meeting specifically with the clients in the Chevrolet area in advance of the hearing, so we'll be sure to get their impact. There's a sense that our current proposal would have the result of limiting the service in that area, but would have very negative impact.
Ms. Sapp, as you've indicated, staff's happy to have the additional meetings, or any that are required, and you know, we're happy, you know, to, again, this is for public comment, and we're looking for input, and I think by adding alternatives, or I think will only be beneficial to the entire process.
If you need a member of the committee to move that, I will do so.
It's a friendly amendment, I think.
You're moving the amendment that...
my understanding is that you have to be a member of the committee to move the amendment, and I'm just now a member of the committee, and I'm happy to move the amendment.
And as maker of the motion, I'm happy to accept it.
Okay.
Mr. Downs?
Yes.
I just have a couple of questions. What part of these recommendations require a public hearing?
They're in...
Are they the ones that eliminate service or reduce service?
Yes, usually the eliminations require the public hearing. It's the additions that do not. I think in the district of the recommendations we made, a couple do not require a public hearing.
We've been very concerned, as you know, about late night service on 16th Street affecting D.C. and Maryland. And I'm surprised to see that you haven't recommended any adjustments there.
On 16th Street, the first thing that we did to try to ease the overcrowding situation is we reallocated articulated 60-foot buses for 40-foot buses to make an attempt to make the change without increasing the expense to operate the service. And we think that we've added or reallocated management staff out there to try to ensure that the buses are running as timely as possible. We think that's had a positive impact. Part of the FY14 budget process does have included in the base an initiative for additional metro bus service. I think that is probably where we will come back with recommendations that would require an increase in funding, which I think is what would happen, what would be needed on 16th Street. So we're developing those final recommendations now as part of the budget process. Again, this is a give and take of tweaking, and major adjustments to service like that are relatively expensive, and it's something that we couldn't fit into this budget process without including expenses.
Okay. You also are recommending the elimination of the E3 and E4. Does this affect Chevy Chase?
I'll let Jim Hamry, our Director of Planning, come forward and speak to the specifics.
Specifically, the amount of service in the Chevy Chase area does not change. What we're doing is splitting the line so there's an eastern part and a western part and changing some of the route designations, but essentially retaining, with a few improvements, the existing service patterns. But by splitting it, we should be able to have better on-time performance because, crossing all the way from northeast to far northwest, you can encounter a few traffic issues, and so this will help us operate more effectively.
So with my kind of basic understanding of that route, it serves Knollwood, correct?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
So if I'm standing at the bus stop at Knollwood, do I have fewer buses that show up or no?
You should see the same number of buses. They might not have the same route designation, but there'll be the same number of buses.
Same number at the same frequency?
Yes.
Okay. And let me, it seems like we just had these big regional meetings where we talked about service. And why wouldn't we talk about these routes then?
Well, actually, this is a recommendation of our service evaluation study from last fall. So we did have public meetings, and there's a formal report that we can share that details all of these recommendations. So we have been discussing this.
Right, so they were available then. But my question is, you know, I hosted, I know a lot of board members went out to these big community meetings that were widely publicized. So if this information was available then, why didn't we discuss it then? We're having another series of public meetings. Some, you know, just a few months later.
Well, I think from an annual process, I mean, there's so many, there are, you know, the board authorizes the changes last year at this time that we've implemented. Some have implemented most of the recommendations and they'll be finished up later this year. We improved the services with the $5 million that we talked about earlier.
Right.
Those service changes have been developed. This is the next set of changes. Again, if with approval in December, it's going to take us all of 2013 to implement these. It's a complicated process, and then we'll come back in the budget process and discuss initiatives that would expand services in some areas. So it takes time to go from the public hearings to the, you know, to have the studies, to meet with the public, to develop the proposals, to meet with the jurisdictions, to make sure we get everybody on board. You know, it's not the quickest process, but it's one that we hopefully touches every base that we need to. And again, these improvements, if approved by the end of the year, would be implemented throughout 2013, calendar 2013.
Okay, so I'm just mindful, and that's my last point, of the last time we talked about changes, some of these streets or routes were also affected. So, you know, if I look at the K6 or the R's or the E's, they've been recently changed. So it's kind of in some cases, and we'll have this discussion, we can have it with DDOT, and one of, you know, every few months we're chipping away at the service. So, you know, I'd just be interested. It is, I'm very focused on what you're proposing for these D's, E's, R's, and K buses, and the fact that we haven't touched the S buses.
Okay, happy.
I'm sorry, Mr. Downing.
When this comes back to the board, I'm assuming this Ms. Hampshire Collins' amendment is accepted. Will we see that it is still a zero-sum game? Yeah, we'll get an update.
It has to be.
Further question on the zero-sum. Some of these changes reduce expenses. Some add service. Additional service should generate additional ridership. Is the additional ridership factored into the zero, or will that be a bonus?
Yeah, the revenue is factored in, and we'll, as we come back to the board, I think we'll give you anticipated ridership growth as a result of the changes that are finally proposed.
But that will be part of getting right. Zero, not
yes. Yes.
Additional revenue.
Thank you. I might, if I could, just mention that Mr. Hamry mentions that we, as part of our service changes for December, we are adding some additional trips on 16th Street.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, just to be clear, based on what the comment Mark's made, the amendment that Prince George's has proposed is not an additional service. It would be another option for what management has proposed. So it would be one or the other.
Just want to see that that's the same.
Good point.
Financial effect.
Thanks.
Right. I was surprised to see the actual passenger counts on the late night S buses on 16th Street. 55, 58, 60 passengers per bus, and in thinking about it and asking some questions, it became clear to me that we don't actually know, we can't actually document changes on a line by direction, and by time of day, over time, because the system doesn't actually register fares at the fare box. We haven't fully implemented the technology that would allow all entrants and exits to be registered.
through the fare system that would allow us accurate, in effect, real-time counts on bus. And as an expectation going forward that would help all of us, the implementation of that, I know, is part of the capital program. It's in planning. It's in implementation. The new buses come with the capacity to do that. Having a target date for having the system fully developed and operable that would help us with understanding and catching trends like northbound evening 16th Street bus service would be ultimately an essential part of this mid-year adjustment of routes with real-time data and saying to us what the target is for the completion of that system would be helpful.
I can say that about 50 to 60% of the fleet is equipped with automatic passenger counters. All new buses arrive with that technology on there. I think, does the equipment change put it on at all?
Yes.
Yeah, so and we're going through, as we've talked about the onboard equipment change out that will take place over the next 12, 15 months. That should bring it up to speed. So we probably are a year, year and a half away from having all the technology. Then we have to determine how to analyze that knowledge and statistics that the information will bring us. And hopefully we'll, as you say, we'll add to the list of criteria and the list of information that we use in sharing to not only develop these no-cost type of service adjustments, but help us look forward to any additional services that we feel are needed and we bring forward to you as an initiative.
Could we, Richard, could we get a firm commitment about the re-equipping of the bus fleet as part of the capital budget process and the...
Oh, as we'll give you a scheduled completion date.
It's budgeted. It's part of the process. Yeah.
I'll give you a note on it, what the date is.
Good. I'd love to see the system in place for this debate next year about the mid-year budget changes.
That might be a little early, but the equipment should be well along in being installed in the entire fleet by that time.
Okay.
We do have a lot of information on ridership by time of day, and over six periods, we share that with jurisdictional staff and do what we can to. We've got a lot more information than we've had in the past, and I think it's been very helpful.
There's massive improvements
from
the days of paper transfer when you couldn't tell anything about ridership.
So all the revenue collection and the technologies are all working well and giving us as much information. It's very helpful in this process and helps us be more confident that the recommendations we're making, like we did last year, will have a very positive impact.
I always like to say that facts don't set you free, but they are sometimes helpful.
They are helpful.
Any other questions, comments? Hearing none, we have, to recap, we have a maker of the original motion to approve. We have a motion to amend that made by Ms. Porter. And
you could ask for unanimous consent to just do
we can request unanimous consent to approve this as amended. Any objections? Hearing none, the matter is approved. Thanks. Dulles public hearing results.
I'll have Mr. Ash take us through this presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jim Ash. I coordinate the environmental review process for one of the projects. Today we'll be focusing on phase two of the Dulles project. I'd
preliminary engineering for the Dulles project has continued. A number of design refinements were identified by the engineers. Three of those were identified by council as needing a WMATA compact public hearing. We're on phase two from Wheelie Avenue to Dulles Airport and to Route 772. Slide. The three changes that required a WMATA compact public hearing are a change in the North Pavilion at Route 28. Slide, please. Thank you. If you look north of the Dulles Toll Road, you'll see an outlined in yellow an entrance pavilion. This is the new location. The previous location was to the right or east in what appears to be a forested area. That change required a WMATA compact public hearing. Slide, please. The second change that required a hearing was the relocation of the station at Dulles Airport. Previously, it had been underground and in front of the terminal. As proposed, it would be above ground, an aerial station immediately adjacent to the parking garage. Slide. The third change that was proposed was a reconfiguration of parking at Route 772. The number of parking spaces was reduced by about 300. These changes were made to facilitate transit-oriented development. Slide. In February of 2011, the Board of Directors authorized the General Manager to release the environmental assessment and hold a public hearing, schedule a public hearing. The EA was released May the 11th. The public hearing was held June 13th, and the public hearing report then documenting the comments received during that period was released July the 18th. The hearing was held at Herndon High School. We had 14 commenters, either through testimony that day or through emails or letters that were submitted after the fact. The public hearing report, which documented our responses, was released July the 18th. That comment period closed July 27th. We had 18 additional comments submitted. My request this morning is for concurrence on the two reports and authorization to amend the adopted regional system consistent with the recommendations.
Do I hear a motion to approve the recommendation?
Yes. Move approval.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? Mr. Downey?
The change to the adopted regional system is, in fact, our action. The other is a joint action, I believe, of WMATA and the Airport Authority. I'm just wondering if they've acted on the EIS.
The public hearing report was issued jointly by WMATA and the Metropolitan Washington Air Force Authority. The public hearing report supplement is a WMATA-specific document.
But have they acted on?
They have released the public hearing report. They have not taken their final action. It's expected sometime this month.
Okay, thank you.
They had other things to worry about.
I know it's a pet peeve of mine, but the final alignment west of Wheelie Avenue still shows permanent tail tracks in the system west of Wheelie Avenue after completion of phase two, right? Pocket tracks. Right.
In the engineering plan.
Okay. I just
wanted to make sure.
I thought I'm going to check them out myself.
The tails, both of the tail tracks that are previously set up for Dulles Phase 1 will really be the tied in and used as the actual alignment for tying in for Phase 2. So the thing that will remain will be the third track, the pocket track.
First, the pocket tracks.
Yes.
And the other comment, hearing none, all those in favor of the approval of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Vital signs.
Mr. Downs, before we move to vital signs, I did have an issue that I wanted to bring up. Would you like it after vital signs or?
No, we can do it right now.
It's up
rush
to you.
Rush plus.
Yeah, well, yeah, rush plus, exactly. Blue line. Blue line. We are continuing to hear in Virginia from our constituents concern about how this is all working. And, Mr. Charles, I don't know what the timeline is for the look that I assume you all are doing on the crowding on platforms and how it's working for people. And the bus service we instituted, just so everybody knows, is actually the ridership is growing between Crystal City and Roslyn. So that's a good news thing that we're hearing, but we are continuing to hear that. And so, Mr. Charles, I just wanted to ask today in the context of this meeting what the game plan is.
Yeah, well, we have been out subsequent to the introduction of Rush Plus doing some surveys of customers. We also did some passenger counts, realizing it's the summer.
Right. Okay.
And basically what we saw was that we got, only a portion of the diversions that we had expected by the planning. And there's about another 500 per hour that we would like to see diverted from the blue line to the yellow line so that we can help get the passenger loadings, you know, back to where we had planned on. In terms of inbound in the morning, both cases it's more crowded. Inbound in the morning is around our standard. It is more crowded than it was before. We expected that. Yellow line is doing much better because it's got more trains. Orange line is maybe slightly better in terms of what's going on. We intend to go back in October to do passenger counts again. But in the meantime, recognizing that we haven't had as many diversions as possible, we put together a program which we're going to, in fact, I'll ask Lynn Bowersox to come up and talk about it, which we're going to do next week and the following week to try to further communicate to our potential riders, the busy stations like Pentagon City inbound, and I think it's McPherson and Foggy Bottom, I think, coming out as to, hey, try this other line, try the old line, and with a little bit of inducement, and I don't want to take away from her present, what she's going to talk about, so I'll let Lynn describe a little bit more what we're doing in the next couple of weeks.
Sure. So as Richard mentioned, in the customer research that we did, we learned that the reluctance to try the yellow line was associated most often with a reluctance to try transferring. Going through the transfer versus having a one train ride to one's destination seems to be the holdup for a lot of people. So to try to educate, inform our customers and incentivize them to try the yellow line option, beginning next Tuesday through the 28th of September, we'll have staff out in stations in the morning and evening peak periods. They'll have on very bright yellow T-shirts. I just said for a sample I'll share with you. They'll be handing out these cards and intercepting customers and asking them to try the yellow line service, pointing out two key benefits. One is that depending on the time of their arrival and the timing of the trains, very often the yellow line option can be a faster total trip time for them than waiting for the blue line train. Also, because of the capacity balancing, there's often more likely a seat on the yellow line train in the peak period. So we're going to be pointing that out. We'll be handing them information, and we'll be offering for their incentive to try transferring at the transfer location, we'll be offering a $5 fare card, which they can then load onto their smart trip. We're hopeful that they will then come online to WMATA.com/HelloYellow after that experience and give us their feedback. Tell us what that transfer experience was like, how their train travel went, what more we can do to educate, inform, and inspire them to continue making that change every day. We think we'll learn a lot from that. We'll know whether we have an awareness issue or we have an experience issue. And we can go from there in terms of our service offering.
That's terrific. Thank you very much.
Okay. Andrea.
Thank you. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. Here today to talk about our performance on the system for the second quarter of the calendar year 2012, so that's April, May, June. And the highlights of the quarter, if you go to the next slide, please. key highlights, which I'll be going into a little bit more detail about, is that we are effectively managing our on-time performance, even in an environment of increasing challenges. Our better maintenance practices are starting to deliver results for our customers. We've had some challenges during the quarter with employee and injury rates, but we're still on track to meet our targets for the year. And as the general manager noted earlier with the earlier committee, thinking about performance as a growing trend, we've developed business plans throughout the organization linked to our strategic plan and then further to the budget. So we'll be hearing a lot more about that in the coming months. Next slide. So managing on-time performance in an environment of increasing challenges. On the rail side, for the quarter, on average, we achieved 90.5%. So that's just above our target of 90%. This is consistent with the same time frame last year. And that's pretty significant because we've had a lot more planned track work, and we've also had some more train delays. We're up about 4% compared to last year. So we were able to maintain the on-time performance despite some of those challenges. Also, as you know, in June, we introduced Rush Plus, and we've just really been trying to manage our on-time performance by thinking about taking a break from track work during the spring, which was part of this time frame. Also, focusing on restoring the regular midday service downtown and concentrating the track work in the midday towards the ends of the line where fewer customers are impacted. So we saw for the fourth month in a row at or above target performance. So that's pretty positive for rail. On the bus side for the quarter, we averaged 76%, a couple points below our target of 78%. But the good news is it's better than the same time period last year. It illustrates that our improved performance is a result of some of the service changes we've been doing. You talked about that a little bit earlier with Jack about some of the upcoming changes. We've been adding service to more higher ridership routes and providing more frequent service during the peak, adjusting schedules to reflect traffic, so we're more on time. Also, the service operations managers out on the street and in the on-time performance center are really focusing on using technology to manage on-time performance, whether NextBus or dashboards that are available to them. On access services, next slide, we hugged the line of the target of 92%, achieving 92.7% for the quarter. That was just slightly better than last year, about half a percentage point, and that continues to be due to managing the call center effectively and proactively managing service on the street. Okay, next slide. So the next kind of message was about better maintenance practices are delivering results for customers. And the really good news story for the quarter is escalator availability, probably the most dramatic improvement. For the quarter, we achieved 90.4%. That's a little bit above our target of 89%. But if you look at what we achieved last year at the same time frame, it's significantly higher. So last year it was 83.6. So we're up quite a lot. And this is a big achievement, really, for the first time in about 3 years. We're consistently on nearing our target for escalator availability. The actions that we've been taking that you've heard about a lot over the last year are starting to pay off. In particular, one kind of sub-measure that we track, which is called mean time to repair, has improved tremendously. And when I say tremendously, it's 60%. So that means, and that's compared to last year, that means that a customer who may have seen an escalator out on their morning commute due to unplanned maintenance, an unplanned outage, could very well come back at the end of their workday and see the same escalator back in service, so we're getting them up faster. And again, kind of the message about we have a lot of challenges in the environment that they were operating in. So we had quite a few hours dedicated to modernizing and replacing escalators. Compared to last year, we had 31 units were out of service in the quarter. That's almost double the amount of service hours as last year. So the good news is we're keeping the escalators running. And on buses for our fleet, we ran 8% more miles, which is about 550 miles. More this quarter compared to last year before we experienced a mechanical failure. This is due to near constant evaluation of preventive maintenance results from our bus maintenance folks, completing the replacement of the hybrid electronic and cooling systems, And as a reminder, we did improve our target. We increased it during 2011 because we were seeing better performance due to better maintenance practices and new buses and so on. So we increased it to 7,700 miles. For rail cars, reliability increased during the quarter as compared to the last year. Preventive maintenance on doors in particular has resulted in improved performance. So we saw improvements in each month of the quarter that I'm talking about here on the 2 and 3Ks and 6K fleets. We had some challenges with the hot weather in June, which was kind of record-setting 95-plus degree days. And just like last year, you know, we saw the same challenges with air conditioning, but the good news is that these rarely resulted in delays for customers. They may have been uncomfortable from time to time, but they weren't delayed. So we've improved on that. Next slide. Employee injury and customer injuries. We did see some increase in some challenges with our injury rates. The employee injuries climbed to a new high in the quarter, and that was primarily driven by an increase in injuries that occurred in May, and we kind of looked at what was going on. There were three incidents alone that resulted in 9 injuries. Four of our employees were in a work truck, were struck by a drunk driver. We had some of our police officers injured while on duty while making an arrest, and a couple of employees were injured in the Shady Grove Yard incident. So that tended to drive up the employee injury rate. We're continuing to track that and look at the root cause for those and trying to address them. On the customer injury side, we saw a 20% increase compared to the same period last year. Slips, trips, and falls, and bus collision-related injuries were the leading cause. We had 5 more bus collisions than we did last year, so the same time period last year, so that contributed to some of the increase. We have started to increase our safety communications messaging to customers, looking at, you know, frequent problems in the system and trying to message to customers to be careful. Next slide, crime rate. Overall, the number of crimes was pretty consistent with the same time period last year. We saw kind of some puts and takes, if I can put it that way. So the location of crime shifted away from rail stations during the quarter and more towards parking facilities and in the bus system. We did saw an arrest of a couple pickpockets in April and in the early spring, and that reduced our pickpocket incidents by 64% by the following month. So we got the guys that were causing a lot of havoc in the system. And I believe you have a security report coming up from Chief Tabor next month, so he'll be giving you more details on the crime rates. And that concludes my presentation on vital signs.
Ms. Porter?
Thank you. I just wanted to point out, if you look at the detailed information on page 66, the escalator availability numbers are fairly dramatically improved over last year, and they've been a steady upward increase all year. And we took a lot of flack on, you know, elevator maintenance, and deservedly so, when things were getting worse. And I think we ought to make sure that this story that, you know, there has been a very consistent and a very sustained effort to improve escalator availability, and that it's actually paying off. We need to get that information out there. And I think it's great that we do vital signs, but there's so many things that we track that often sort of the wow stuff gets lost in the this goes up and this goes down and this goes up and this goes down. But there's really something dramatic going on in this report, and I think we maybe should take a little time to say, you know, yes, we were really doing a lousy job. We've put a sustained effort into it, and look, it's actually paying off. We've got remarkably better numbers. I really think we need to get that information out there.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? When Andrea and I met to go over this part of the agenda, we had a brief discussion about vital signs, including a key vital sign of customer satisfaction and how we get an integrated
vital signs report that includes how the customer is feeling about their experience on the system, and then track that over time the same way we do with injuries and with on-time performance. I know there is a whole customer satisfaction initiative going on, and I would encourage you to have that be integrated in here. I'm not sure that you can have a comprehensive vital signs report without having the customer be part of that vital signs initiative, which I think is one of the best in the this is one of the best in the transit industry, far and away. And that doesn't mean we can't improve it, in particular about how we deal with the customer's perception, as Kathy was pointing out about escalators.
I agree with you 100%. What we've, since I got here, what we've used is a very, very rough surrogate, which is customer complaints and customer commendations, which I was never satisfied with. So we've been moving in the direction to establish just what you're talking about. We're going to be doing a very rigorous type customer survey, establish a baseline of what people feel about our service, rail, bus, and I think Metro Access too, I'm not sure, but rail, bus for sure. So we can establish that as a baseline. It'll be a measurement, and then we can move from there and to see all the actions that, you know, I talked about several months ago in terms of improving the customer experience beyond the basics of safety and reliability, how that shows up in terms of what our customers are saying back to us. I think that will give us something to work from. It's not, you can't measure against other properties with that, but at least we can measure against ourselves and see if we're making progress in the right direction.
Just because we're better than most properties.
That's
this
right.
Is the end product.
Although some are beginning to generate such measurements, I'm sure you're familiar with NJT and what they've been doing, and their first set of results wasn't really good.
Well, I'm birthing them, yeah.
And it was their successors who had to do that, but they're now showing improvement, and it's, I think it pays off.
Any other questions or comments for Customer Service and Operations Committee? Hearing none, I would adjourn the committee.